KPCW News Time is 8:06. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman. Well, it's a little bit cool. You can sort of feel fall in the air. Let's see what the weather is coming up for this weekend. Let's talk to Cedric Haynes of ABC4 Weather Center.
Happy Friday. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout your Friday. Watch out for some patchy smoke and some scattered clouds out there for us as we go throughout the day. There is a chance of a few isolated pop-up afternoon showers and storms, but not looking at any high rain chance. High temperatures will climb into the low 70s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 70s to near 80 in the Heber Valley. As we go into your weekend, the holiday weekend, it's looking very nice out there as we're expecting lots of sunshine, especially for your Saturday. We're looking at those high temperatures climbing into the mid 70s. Low temperatures early Saturday morning in the Heber Valley will be down into the mid 40s. So a little on the cool side, we'll warm up into the low 80s as we go throughout your Saturday afternoon. As we move into your Sunday, look for plenty of sunshine across the area. Temperatures once again climbing to about the mid to upper 70s for us in Park City for highs. We'll be seeing those temperatures climbing into the mid 80s in the Heber Valley after starting off in the low 40s for morning low temperatures as we go into your Sunday morning, so be aware of that. Otherwise, as we get into your Monday, Labor Day itself, looking at mostly sunny skies, temperatures kicking off the day in the Heber Valley in the 40s once again. We'll see those highs climbing back into the mid 80s, though, in the Heber Valley by the afternoon on Monday. We'll see those highs in the low 80s for highs as we get towards your Monday afternoon in Park City. Otherwise, heading into the rest of next week, we're going to stay with those warm temperatures. Highs will be right around 80 degrees as we go into your Tuesday and Wednesday with highs in the mid-80s for the Heber Valley. Again, we'll notice mostly sunny to partly sunny skies, and we may introduce a chance of a couple of isolated showers and storms again as we get towards the middle of next week. But between now and then, it's looking like a lot of sunshine after we get past today and temperatures that are going to be a very typical for your Labor Day weekend across the area. But watch out for some of those cool morning starts as we get into the Heber Valley. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
We're going to be speaking with Doug Bergeron about his interest in the Wahale development in just a minute. But then we'll talk to Elizabeth Rasmussen, the executive director of Better Boundaries. She'll stop by to talk about this week's court decision. And Wasatch County Council member Luke Searle will discuss the county's program to offer tax relief for seniors. And we'll finish our hour by speaking with Candace Hart and Barry Nan Cohen-Rothschild about my favorite holiday of the year, Miner's Day, coming up Monday. First, let's talk with Doug Bergeron. Bergeron or Bergeron? Let me get it right.
Bergeron.
Doug Bergeron. Thanks for joining us this morning. Well, we've started with your name. Let's talk a little bit about who you are.
Well, I come from Windsor, Ontario. I've been in the United States for 45 years, now a U.S. citizen, the son of an Avon lady, and my father was in a wheelchair with MS, and a very happy family and a very wonderful upbringing.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit more about your business career, because it's a pretty interesting story.
I was educated as a computer scientist and quickly found myself in businesses in buying businesses that needed turnarounds. I love fixing things. A lot of guys do it in their garage. I do it with businesses. The big story was the acquisition of Verifone in 2001 from Hewlett-Packard. They had bought the business the year before, or 3 years earlier, for $1.3 billion. We bought it for $50 million, turned it around, grew it, IPO'd it, brought it to 100 countries, and when I left 13 years later, it was worth $5 billion.
And just so people understand, what does that company do?
Well, everybody in town uses it every day when they swipe their credit card. So we encrypt, we interact with the bank networks, and we make sure your credit card gets authorized or not authorized. And if it's authorized, we make sure those transactions get journaled properly so they show up in your statement.
And since then, what kind of business ventures have you pursued?
Oh, I've built several businesses over the years in New York and Chicago and in California. I always had a part-time residence in Utah, in Park City, until around 2018 when I made it full-time. And I've built a couple nice spec homes. The recent...
to call that house a spec home.
It is a spec home. I built it for a very unique subset of buyers, billionaires, mm-hmm. That want the best of the best. And I knew if I violated every... principle around spec home building and just threw you know, my heart and soul into it and a lot of money, I would create something that was going to be worth a lot more than I paid for it, which was the case.
And for those of us, for those of you who aren't quite following, we sort of skipped the lead here. The house we're talking about is the house that was featured in the film Mountainhead. It was a spec house built in Deer Valley. I think it was a Michael Upwall design, wasn't it?
It was.
And spectacular home, which has now been sold, as I understand.
Well, it was sold 1 week after I put it up for sale last November. At a record price never seen before in Utah.
It's an amazing house, at least judging by the film. So let's talk about Wahali. The Wahali real estate development filed for bankruptcy about 3 weeks ago. I had a bankruptcy lawyer on to talk about how that process works. I understand you're following it pretty closely. There was that recent development, which is somewhat unusual filing, where the homeowners got together and said, can we please pay the golf course employees to try to keep the place going? What else is going on in that bankruptcy, and what is your sense as to where things stand?
Well, they filed for Chapter 11, which is an opportunity in bankruptcy law for a pause, if you will, so everybody can calm down and relax and see if a plan of reorganization, strategic, capital, strategy can be put into play to save the project. Mm-hmm. Usually requires new money and new thinking.
And again, typically in a bankruptcy like this, the people at the top of the heap, for lack of a better term, are the secured creditors.
Right.
And as we look at this now, what is your sense of the overall economics of the development? How much is the secured debt, and what do you think the value of the enterprise is? How does it balance out?
Well, I played the course yesterday.
How was it?
It's amazing. It is absolutely the most amazing course I've played. And I'm a member at Glen Wild and Stanford and others in the country. But this is an amazing, unique course with a very unique feel and play.
Now, the people I've talked to just rave about the golf course.
Yeah.
And I take it that under the bankruptcy, that is being protected and it's being serviced and taken care of.
Well, that's part of what the motion, which the judge granted by the homeowners, was to keep some money as an administrative expense, which is the most senior, as you know, to keep the golf course running through probably mid-late October. And then that golf course has to be winterized. You can't just leave a beautiful golf course with these beautiful greens to withstand Utah's tough winters without the proper protection.
Okay, so will there be additional, in a Chapter 11, oftentimes you have the existing management runs the place. Here we've had some sort of, interference is the wrong word, some injection of other parties. What is going on as a practical matter now in terms of who is running things?
Well, the existing ownership team is running it. Mm-hmm. I think a plan of reorganization needs to be entered into with professional assets backing it. And several million dollars need to be raised just to kind of keep this thing moving.
Is there, debtor in possession? Is there DIP finance? Has DIP financing been arranged yet?
Not yet.
Okay. That's the next step, isn't it? You got to get some money in there, I assume.
They have to get money in. DIP financing usually requires a path towards a plan, if not a full plan.
Otherwise, who's going to want to loan you? If you don't see a way you're going to get paid back, you're unlikely to loan somebody money. Even I get that.
Exactly. But it is most senior, as he said.
Okay. So let's talk about what your thoughts about Wahali are. What do you think? I mean, obviously, there's been press that indicates you have an interest in possibly being the one to purchase it out of bankruptcy. Talk to us about what your thinking is.
Well, it starts with an amazing piece of real estate that is, I think, pretty close to Park City. And as Park City grows, it'll become closer, if you will.
Just so people know, can you describe where it is?
It's 15 miles east of Kimball Junction.
On 80?
On 80, just okay. A few exits past Promontory.
Okay, so that's where it is.
Yeah, just north of the highway, beautiful entryway. They've gone through over $100 million of design, building, capital. They're not done. The golf course is done, but everything else is incomplete.
Okay. And, most of these developments here in town and elsewhere, when you have a high-end golf course, you have a series of amenities that goes with it. How far along are they on those kinds of things? Because I think you have this issue of, you know, in order to find a viable way out, you have to have financing and you have to have a way to be able to sell the real estate, right? Am I thinking about this right?
Yeah, and, you know, they're able to sell real estate at Marcello without the golf course being operational, but you have skiing. And right. This is, in a way, the golf course is the only thing there. But it's a perfect location for, in my belief, a wellness spa, other amenities that you point out to for families and for golfers alike.
As you look at the existing plan, would you anticipate using sort of developing a different set of amenities, or do you think they basically had it right?
I think everything needs to be reimagined, right from a whiteboard going forward. We know the golf course is great. Let's look.
You've got an anchor, right?
You've got an anchor tenant, an anchor amenity, right, if you will. The imagination around where building sites go probably has to be looked at again. We probably have to get back in bed with the county and with the town of Colville. My guess is more can be done through partnership and strategic relationships that has been done in terms of some of these amenities. I think we need to have a discussion as to can memberships be sold to non-lot owners. I mean, if you want to have a world-class golf course, it needs to be supported. There's tourists that come to town every year that want to spend money, summer and winter, and why not tap into that deep pool of capital for the benefit of all the residents here? Right now, memberships are only sold to lot owners.
And how many lot owners would there have been under their model?
Under their model, there would have been about 400.
So 400 golf memberships.
Yeah, but there's 35 lots that have been sold. Some of them, well, only one house really in the process of being built. And some of those lots have not closed. And even that deposit cash is sitting in nowhere, no man's land right now.
Are they unsecured creditors?
Yes.
Wow. That would be a really unpleasant feeling, I think.
Yeah, I feel bad. I feel bad for all of the lot owners there. I don't want to say homeowners because nobody's living there yet. For the staff, they've gone from 350 staff to 40. So there's 300 people that have lost their jobs and another 40 that are probably listening to the show right now. And I feel bad for all the vendors in the community, the guys that put up lights, the guys that paved roads.
Unsecured creditors.
Unsecured creditors. And they were, in fact, used as, you know, sources of capital. That's not right.
Yeah. And again, we talked about protecting the golf course. Do you have some concerns about other aspects of the development, not having staff to keep them maintained?
No. Most of the rest of the development staff requirements are just around security. They've basically stopped construction on any of the other buildings and any of the roads, which is a smart thing to do. Most developments, you build 50 lots, you sell 50 lots, you build 50 more. You don't boil the ocean. Boiling the ocean is really expensive.
And I guess so obviously there's some risk of deterioration for half-finished buildings, but that's not a huge problem.
I'm not worried about that.
What are you worried about? Where do you go from here? How does this process play out, and when do you think you might have an opportunity to make a bid?
Well, the good news, and I mentioned this to others about bankruptcy, if there's any good news, is they move quickly.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to work with the existing owners to help them fashion a rethought plan. Doesn't have to be complete, but at least what are we going to do for the next 12 months? And in that, I'll be injecting some capital, hopefully.
Would you anticipate continuing to work with the existing owner or ownership, or do you think there would be a new sort of set of?
Well, they are the owners until they're not the owners.
Exactly.
So yes, of course.
Okay. But again, so tell me a little bit, for our listeners who aren't probably as familiar with sort of how bankruptcy purchases like this work, explain how this would work. You would enter into some kind of, at a minimum, an equity sharing or some kind of agreement where you'd have a piece, or if not all of this?
Well, the first capital would likely go in as a secured debt.
Yes.
And that would buy time to fashion a plan. And in the final disposition of that plan, I would have some percentage of ownership. But if nothing works out, then it goes into an auction.
Yeah.
And I would likely participate in that. But I think I can be helpful in its current situation, helpful with the current owners, and hopefully helpful to the current lot owners as well.
And is it possible to play the course now?
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing course. I wish I could play golf better. But the views, the greens, the wide fairways, and the way it's being maintained is actually quite worthy of praise.
Okay. What else do you want our listeners to know about what you're thinking and where things might go from here?
No, listen, there's always an anti-progress crowd out there. I think if let to run its full course, we will create with the current team or another team eventually a great place for Park City residents to enjoy. It's going to be a great source of tax revenue. We need tax revenue for our roads, for our schools, for everything else. So, and it's actually taking traffic away from Main Street and the Deer Valley area where everything seems to be centered these days, and creating another vibrant hub in Park City.
Doug Bergeron, thanks for spending time with us this morning, and we look forward to hearing more about how things develop at Wahali.
Thanks.
After nearly 7 years at the helm of Park City Ski and Snowboard, Executive Director Christy Hind is moving on. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher has more.
Joined Park City Ski and Snowboard's Board of Managers in 2018 when the organization had just formed an umbrella organization to integrate five local sport clubs, all with unique missions and cultures. She said when she took on the executive director role, her goal was to unite the club, focus on culture among the teams, and ensure consistent delivery of safe and high-quality athletic programming across the nine winter sport disciplines the organization serves. Under her tenure, membership has doubled, and Park City Ski and Snowboard is on the map as a world-class club. More importantly, she said, they've become one club, a community hub, she said, where athletes and families come together to train, compete, and contribute positively to the culture of sport in Park City and around the world. She said those goals have been met, and it's time to move to new leadership and target the next set of goals. She'll be working with the board over the coming weeks to ensure a seamless transition. Leslie Thatcher, KPCW News.
The Promontory Foundation awarded grants to Summit County nonprofits Wednesday at an annual gathering. KPCW's Christine Weller reports Peace House was the high-impact recipient.
The Promontory Foundation is the charitable arm of the Promontory Club, a private gated community east of Park City. The Happiest Hour grant reception is an event club members look forward to every year, as it's the night when they get to see how their donations are supporting local nonprofits. General Manager Kelly Brown said 35 organizations were awarded grants from the Promontory Foundation Wednesday, totaling $330,000. Peace House received the top prize, called the Promontory Promise Grant, of $40,000. The nonprofit is dedicated to ending interpersonal violence and abuse and provides survivors with safe housing, support services, and prevention education. Associate Director Catherine Aguilera said Peace House was ecstatic about the news.
Violence doesn't just affect the adults. It affects children who may have witnessed the violence, who may have been recipients of violence. And so this grant really allows us to provide comprehensive services to those children, connecting them to vital interventions, also just helping them restore some balance and stability.
Services would include safety planning for kids, as well as art projects to regain stability and confidence. Brown said many grant recipients support social services in the area, including Peace House, the Wasatch Immigration Project, and Summit Community Gardens and Eats.
There's some food insecurity out there, mental health needs, need for mediation and pro bono legal services. So we really vet those applicants and try to find the organizations that we feel the foundation could have the most impact on.
Others support arts and culture, including the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County, the Egyptian Theater, and the Kimball Arts Center. KPCW was also among the recipients and plans to use its $10,000 grant to expand its programming, including music offerings and digital and app services. Promontory members fund the grants at a community charity event each July. Since its inception in 2006, the foundation has raised $3.5 million for local nonprofits. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
So this week, Judge Diana Gibson issued a decision that would require a major change in the way Utah's congressional districts are drawn. Here to talk about the implications of that decision is the Executive Director of Better Boundaries, Elizabeth Rasmussen. Elizabeth, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Elizabeth, let's start by quickly reviewing the long story of how we got here.
Well, Better Boundaries was first started in 2017, and in 2018, we ran a ballot initiative that would create an independent redistricting commission in Utah. What that means is that we'd have public input in the map drawing process to have that additional check against the legislature. It was passed in 2018, and since then, we've been supporting a legal case in order to get that actually implemented.
So what happened after it was passed, the legislature then, again, the legislature took it upon itself to revise the process. So there was the redistricting commission. Did they come out with districts they recommended?
They did. They came out with three maps that they recommended, and the legislature passed a bill that made the commission advisory only. And so they rejected their maps and passed their own maps.
And again, to continue with the saga, there was a decision last year from the Supreme Court that said what?
It said that we as Utahns have a constitutional right to reform our government through the ballot initiative process.
Okay, and with that, it then goes back, went back to, I know we're doing a play-by-play to try to bring people up to speed, but with that, then it went back to Judge Gibson, and what was her decision this week?
Her decision was that Proposition 4 is now the law of the land. According to the precedent set by the Utah Supreme Court, she applied that and said that because we have the right to reform our government, the ballot initiative of Prop 4 is our law, and because of that, our current map is out of compliance with Proposition 4. And so the legislature has to go back to the drawing board and redraw a map that's in compliance with Prop 4.
And let's talk about the principles. I mean, as I read the order, the legislature has a fairly short turnaround time. They have to redraw these maps under the principles of Prop 4. What are those principles?
Prop 4 laid out some pretty specific ones. They are to ensure that every vote is counted equally. You want to keep communities together, respect the geography of the state, natural boundaries as well is a factor. So mountains, roads, making those, take those into account. And then also have a transparent process and no partisan gerrymandering.
And of course, the existing maps, I believe there's an intersection in Salt Lake City where you can go to all four Salt Lake, Utah congressional districts at one corner. Is that basically right?
Yep. If you go to Mill Creek, you can walk along the gerrymander, as we call it.
Okay. So, 30 days. Legislature, how has the legislature responded?
They've not been too happy with the ruling, and that makes sense. But they are going to go through the process and comply with the judge's order, so we'll be monitoring them closely to make sure they follow the principles of Prop 4.
There was a statement, I think it was it yesterday or the day before,
yesterday,
that was issued by the legislature where they said, basically, as I read it, it was, we're not particularly happy about this, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Is that basically, okay, so while they are doing that, and those will be ready in a month or so, they have what, 30 days?
Yeah, it's till September 24th.
Will the legal women voters or the plaintiffs in the case, will they be drawing some of their own maps to compare? And how does that work?
It's yet to be determined. The judge, they asked or they requested they invited them to submit maps, but it wasn't required. The only group that's required is the legislature.
Do you anticipate that the league will submit maps just to give the judge something to compare?
That would be more of a question between the league and their legal team.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't have that.
You don't have that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about where things might go from here. The statement from the legislature, as I read it, was, we're going to do this, but we are not abandoning any of our potential legal options to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been statements by some members of the legislature on social media where they say, we will take this to the Supreme Court and to the U.S. Supreme Court if necessary. Do we expect a prolonged legal battle here?
I mean, that's been their tactic this whole time. It's to delay the process so we don't get these new maps. So we're anticipating anything and prepared for anything to happen.
Let's get nerdy. Okay.
Kay.
So it's September of 2025 on Monday. Maps are going to go in at the end of September. The election that this might affect is November of 2026. Assuming they submit these maps and assuming that the judge rules on them, say in October or November, and we see appeals. Have you thought about the sort of complexities of potential stays? How do you think things might progress from a litigation perspective?
Well, Judge Gibson has already indicated, thankfully, that she won't stay the case, which is great news. It really comes down to the Utah Supreme Court. At this point, the legislature has indicated that they're going to request a stay from the Utah Supreme Court, so we'll see what they say in response. Of course, we'll be fighting that they don't stay this decision. But the lieutenant governor has indicated new maps have to be in place, or whatever map is in place in November, that's going to be used for 2026. So that's why this process is pretty expedited.
Okay, so the maps that are in place in November of 2025 will be the ones in use for November of 2026. So really, it comes down to the stay being almost the whole game here. Because, yep. You know, if you and that, of course, is going to go to the Utah Supreme Court. Does it bypass the Court of Appeals? I know we're in full lawyers nerd city, and I apologize to our listeners. But will they bypass the Court of Appeals and go straight to the Supreme Court? Do you know?
I don't know for certain, but they have indicated that.
I think that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so... you have to ask yourself, given the opinion of the Supreme Court that led to all this, how likely are they? I mean, again, unfortunately you can't gamble on the results of Supreme Court decisions, but if we were to speculate, the decision, as I read it last year, it sounded to me as though the court was inclined to support the right of the voters to create this kind of a redistricting commission. Does that augur well for the lack of a stay? What do you think?
Well, we're cautiously optimistic, in the chances. The biggest thing here is that because Prop 4 is now law, the court has ruled that, our current maps, they're illegal. So we really don't have maps governing the state right now. And so at this point, the legislature needs to redraw them in order to have maps for the 2026 election. So we're optimistic on how this is going, but we still need to see what the Utah Supreme Court will say.
As you've listened to the objections from some of the legislators, and do the best you can, can you do the best you can to characterize, I mean, I've heard terms like judicial overreach. I think the president weighed in and said it was unconstitutional. I'm not sure what the basis of that was, but what is your sense of the best argument that they've put forward as to why this is wrong?
A lot of them have gone to the Utah Constitution, which they say it does state that the legislature has the authority to draw the boundaries. But what they're neglecting to mention is that Supreme Court ruling in July, which stated that we have a constitutional right to ballot initiative to reform our government. The wording is alter or reform our government. And so we have that right that was used for this in Prop 4. So saying this is unconstitutional is neglecting a huge part of our state constitution.
Yeah, there was language that I think the Supreme Court cited at the time, which is to the effect of the ultimate power belongs to the people. I think it's almost like at the top of the Constitution.
Yes.
So mechanically, I guess what's happening here is that they are taking that right and the right to reform the government and almost superseding the legislature in a way that is, I guess, contemplated by the Constitution. Is that the theory?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And this process, I mean, it doesn't take away the legislature's ability to be in the process. It just adds another check to their power, but they're not liking that approach.
Okay. We will be following this closely. What is Better Boundaries doing any other projects these days?
We're still working to protect our right to ballot initiative. Last year, we saw Amendment D, where the legislature tried to take that away in direct response to the July 2024 ruling. And so we're seeing some constitutional amendments being proposed, like SJR2 and others, possibly in the next session. We'll be working for a vote no on those.
Do you anticipate that there will be other efforts to limit or eliminate the ballot initiative procedure in the next legislative session?
Yeah, we anticipate that.
Well, that'll keep you busy.
Yep.
Okay, thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Residents want Summit County to repeal the ordinance that initially approved Dakota Pacific's controversial development in December. The call comes after a court-ruled development on that decision would be moot. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains.
Residents organized a referendum that sought to overturn the December ordinance approving Dakota Pacific Real Estate's Kimball Junction project. Now the district court judge says the referendum won't have any, quote, practical effect on that mixed-use development. They want the Summit County Council to repeal its December decision. Angela Mosqueda of the referendum group Protect Summit County says residents will appeal the mootness decision if the council does not repeal, since the judge hasn't yet dismissed the case.
Really, at this point, whether it's through ballot referendum or it's through action of the county, repealing Ordinance 987 is all we want in order that we can proceed to the next step and look at SB 26.
Senate Bill 26 is the new state law that the county and court agree allows Dakota Pacific to develop on its land around Tech Center Drive. The residents who appealed to 3rd District Court to get a referendum on the November ballot have also expressed interest in challenging that law as unconstitutional. Mosqueda says their legal fees have already eclipsed $100,000. A GoFundMe had raised raised 12,000 as of August 28th.
We are talking to people of different means behind the scenes to help us get the lion's share of the bills paid.
Referendum supporters have been frustrated with costs on both sides, as taxpayers are also paying for Summit County Clerk Eferse's defense, since she's the one responding to their legal challenge. One argument made by attorneys on the clerk's behalf was that SB 26 makes the issue moot. Court papers state the five residents who took first to court, Mosqueda, Reed Galen, Ruby Diaz, Dana Williams, and Brendan Weinstein, then offered to enter a stipulated order declaring that the county's ordinance had no legal effect. They claimed first would not say whether the ordinance had legal effect, so the residents' attorneys decided to argue the issue was not moot. They said the referendum is not moot unless the county or the court undoes the council's December decision. Council members considered repealing it August 20th. They decided not to, partly because they didn't want to intentionally moot the issue, which might seem like putting a thumb on the scales before the judge made a ruling. Another vote on whether to repeal has not been scheduled as of August 28th. County spokesperson Derek Sitaway says the council may decide to revisit the issue in the future, but he does not expect a special meeting to repeal the old ordinance this week. The next scheduled council meeting is September 3rd. Mosqueda says residents have 21 days to appeal the mootness ruling. Summit County's a financial supporter of KPCW, Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Luke Searle is a member of the Wasatch County Council. He joins us with an update on the county's property tax relief program. Morning, Luke. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Roger. Great to be with you.
So, Luke, let's start with, I know one of the reasons that you were interested in speaking with us this morning was to talk about the property tax relief program. What is it?
Yes, well, we copied up from the playbook that Summit County initiated their program, I think, in 2023, to increase the income limit of the property tax relief that seniors can get. The current program allows for those who are making a household income of up to $40,000 a way to be able to get some relief from their property taxes. We sort of had this realization that cost of living is just going up and up, and pretty much every utility that we have has gone up in the last couple of years. And so in an effort to help with that higher cost of living, we made the adjustment that a new county tax relief program for those that are making less than $63,000 in between that 40 and qualify for some relief from their property taxes.
Okay, so approximately how many county residents do you think are going to be eligible for this?
There's hundreds. And I just got an update from our clerk auditor's office because we're towards the end of this cycle. And that's why I wanted to hop on as well, to just encourage those last minute people who may have not heard or are waiting to make sure that they apply, because Tuesday, September 2nd is that deadline. We have had so far 236 people apply for some kind of senior tax relief abatement, and 171 of those applications qualify for the current programs that's run through the county and state, and then our new program has 65. So I anticipate by next end of the day, next Tuesday, we'll have maybe a little less than 80 new households in Wasatch County now are receiving some relief.
And I take it you felt it was important to change. Why did you think it was important to change the income limit?
Well, again, we looked here in the Wasatch back and said, it's expensive to live here, and right?
Yes.
And to say, how can somebody who has been here for decades be able to stay here with rising property taxes, rising grocery costs, those utilities, and how can we be helpful? I do think that we recognize that this is not the only, this is not the silver bullet. This is not going to be the thing that is the only thing that people probably would need on fixed incomes to be able to do this. But just recognizing in general, the cost of living is really high. But there are other programs in place, and including the One Big Beautiful Bill that was passed actually increased the income tax deduction $6,000 for seniors as well. So hopefully with this, we can try to help with the issue.
And I take it this issue is, it sounds like this issue is pretty important to you.
Yes, it is. Growing up in the Heber Valley, I had some people who were slightly older, and they, you know, it takes a village to raise your kids, and there's something special about our community, and we believe that that includes those that are our seniors, that they add value, and we should be able to show that value and recognize to them that we want them here. Mm-hmm. And there's a state issue with this as well. So.
And I guess the objective here is to allow people who have spent their lives here to be able to stay in their homes.
That is the objective, to help with that process. Again, we know that it probably won't be able to be the only thing that they would need to be able to do that.
And, you know, unless there's anything else on this topic, that sort of segues into what I wanted to ask you about next, which is the update to the general plan. I understand you're starting to gather feedback. Have you had an open house yet?
Yes, we just had an open house this last Wednesday in Wallsburg, in the Round Valley, and got to hear from some residents and taxpayers there about our general plan, as just getting some good input from them. And we're going to have one on Tuesday, September 2nd in Jordanelle at the Jordanelle State Park, and on the 4th in Midway.
Luke, I apologize. I want to go back and make sure, because you mentioned that deadline for the property tax relief program was coming up. Real quickly, how do people, if somebody was listening to this and said, hey, I better apply, what do they do?
Yeah, so they should just go to the county website, and there's a form there, but also they can go in, and they just need to have proof of their income, which the best way to do that is just a copy of their taxes and their tax return. I do just want to mention there was a state bill that was going to eliminate property tax abatement relief for all seniors this last year, called SB 197, and that was vetoed. And there's still sort of rumblings about what to do and to potentially eliminate it in the future. So I just advocate for anybody listening, if you have a neighbor that you think could qualify, please have them to apply by the 2nd, and let your state legislators know that this is an important part for our community.
Okay, sorry for the disruption, but I did want to make sure we got
You're
that.
You're fine.
And let's go back to the general plan. You're starting to get some feedback. What are you hearing?
I think we're hearing some very specific issues that, you know, if I'm a county resident, there's things that happen in my backyard or in my neighborhood that I'm really interested in talking about. So we're interested in having those conversations, but also just in general, what direction do we want to go as a county? And that's sort of difficult, because you sort of see some of these things and you're planning 20 years out, but I think people are interested. People care about this community, and we're sort of seeing where they want certain amenities and certain focuses for us to have.
Any specific issues that you kept hearing over and over again?
Well, I think one thing we want to clarify and to try to do through this process is that the county is all Wasatch County, but our land use authority is only over unincorporated land. And so there are certain developments that have happened that say, hey, what happened here? And sometimes that was within the county, annexed in Heber City, and sort of having those conversations of what we can and can't control.
Okay. What are your top concerns looking into the future as you go through this process?
I'm just excited that we're doing this overhaul. It hasn't happened in a couple decades, and doing it in all corners of the county, so that we can be able to say, this is our roadmap. This is what we're focused and moving towards. I think it's important that we preserve the great character of our community, and to be able to do so while we're growing, because that's sort of the reality of the situation. So how that growth happens, what matters most to us, whether that's open space, keeping taxes low, all of those things are generally really important. And then we can take some deep dive in some areas so we can be proactive in planning. So I love that we're going through the process.
How do you think the character of the county is being affected by what at least I perceive to be an increasing number of second homeowners?
Yeah, I just saw on KCW about how Summit County will probably shrink in the next decade, which is so interesting. That doesn't mean growth isn't occurring, but I think that more and more times we're seeing that not only second homeowners, but Airbnbs and rentals, short-term rentals, are becoming such an interesting and lucrative thing. And that's okay, but we just need to be really aware of that, and how much that impacts a community, how much does it impact a neighborhood when, you know, more than half of the homes there are vacant. And there's policies that people have enacted. Again, we've sort of seen what Summit County is, a little bit what Park City is trying to do, and trying to tailor that for us and trying to address it.
Okay, Luke, anything else you want to share with our listeners before we go? I really appreciate your time this morning.
No, just have a great, safe Labor Day. Appreciate the time to be able to share that. And yeah, be safe out there.
All right, Luke, have a good Labor Day.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Well, Monday is what some people in my household call the best holiday of the year. It's Miner's Day. Here to talk about the event and the history of the signature running of the balls is Barry Nan Cohen Rothschild. And I think we'll be joined in a few minutes by Candace Hart, both Rotarians. Morning, Barry Nan.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. And hopefully I've got the settings right and I'm not sort of babbling over the air with what I think is a closed mic. Barry Nan, let's start. Can you share a bit about the history of the Miner's Day event?
So Miner's Day is what everybody in Park City calls Labor Day, which is what the rest of the world calls it.
They have it wrong.
They have it wrong. We are celebrating our unique heritage on Miner's Day, and this has been a tradition almost as long as the Rotary Club has been in existence, about 40 years, maybe a little bit more. So we have several things that we do on this day. One is we have something called Running of the Balls, where we have been selling golf balls that are numbered all month, and when we sell out of balls, we sell out of balls, and they are released in a channel down Main Street in a race for prizes. The prizes are amazing, and we even have a special ball run called the Silver Strike, where you can buy a ball for $100 for a chance to win a big travel package.
So we have two different kinds of balls. Let's sort of break it down. Historically, we've had the big 15,000 ball run. By the way, I understand this year that they had to renumber the balls?
They did. They had to wash the balls. They had to renumber the balls. The jokes write themselves, Roger.
They do. And I saw a wonderful picture. I understand that the Rotary Club, trying to figure out the most economical and efficient way to get those balls renumbered, hired the Park City Band to renumber the balls?
I do believe we did that. We did that.
There is a wonderful picture of the various band members dutifully trying to write these numbers. I hope they're all legible.
I'm sure they are.
Okay, so really, really some special prizes. So again, we have the regular running of the balls, which is the 15,000, and then we have the special balls. Let's talk about special balls. What are they called?
They are called the Silver Strike balls.
Okay, and there are not very many of those.
No, there are only 100.
Okay.
And they sell for $100 a piece. And we gather a prize package for travel. So you get a certificate for Delta Airlines. You get a certificate for, I don't have it on me.
Some lodging certificate.
And there's one other really amazing thing. It's about a $15,000 value. So it's a tremendous win if you win it.
Okay. And so then we have the regular balls. Talk a little bit about some of the prizes that we're going to, if your ball happens to be one of the lucky ones that gets down the channel early, what are some of the prizes for the regular one?
Some of the prizes are lift tickets to Deer Valley, lift tickets to Park City, dining certificates all over town. I believe Mountain Town donates a concert. There are parties. There are all sorts of cool things that local vendors chip in to support our club and what we're doing with all of this cash.
And what are you doing with all that cash, Marina?
What we are doing with all of that cash is not buying new golf balls. We are instead putting it into the community in our community grants program and into our scholarships program. And we have given away millions of dollars at this point in our history.
Okay, so running the balls is one aspect. What else is going on Miner's Day?
So we have, after the parade, as it heads into City Park, there are games, but we have some very cool stuff during the parade. I think I didn't even really talk to you about the parade.
You didn't talk about the parade, so let's go back to the parade.
Yes, we take the parade for granted, and it's so great. We shouldn't. It's a tremendously fun parade. It is a locals event, so you will see floats from neighborhoods. You will see entries from businesses. You will see entries from friend groups, from nonprofits, and of course, this being the time of year, political candidates in town. But one of the things we have done is added a special experience up close for the parade called the Big Baller Club. And you can be a big baller and be at the cabin on their patio and have a really great front row seat to all of the parade action. And you'll have beverages and you'll have snacks, a little brunch buffet, and a comfortable place to sit.
Well, there's more. First of all, what's a big baller package cost? Do you remember?
I do. It's $375 for an individual and $550 for a couple. And you get with that a Silver Strike ball.
That Those are those big fancy balls.
Those
right?
are the big fancy balls. Okay. Plus, you get huge balls, which is the package of 20 balls. So both of each of those is a $100 value. You get VIP entry to the Big Baller Lounge. You get food and drink, two drink coupons, cocktail or mocktail, and the breakfast buffet. You get swag. You get a souvenir hat and a drink glass, and you get prime seating at the Miner's Day Parade.
And for those of our listeners who are wondering, how do they buy balls? How do they buy balls?
You can go to buyballs.org, and that will take you right to the Miner's Day website. And it will, you can buy balls, you can become a big baller. And there's one other cool thing you can do, which is you can auction, you can bid on an auction for The Rock, which I was just about to tell you about. Because we have a mucking and drilling contest, and we use a giant rock, which is donated by amazing partners. And we do that mucking and drilling contest, and people are bidding on The Rock, and it will be delivered to your home courtesy of our partners.
And I want you, she says that so casually. How much does that rock weigh?
Oh, my goodness.
It weighs several tons.
Several tons.
So the delivery, I think, includes like a crane or something.
It does. And it's about $1,000 in transportation costs to get the rock there. Our amazing partners at Mountain Valley Stone and in the Browns Canyon Quarry have provided the rock. And they do it because they want to be part of this community day.
And I take it there are still balls left.
There are still, we're almost sold out of balls. Okay. You better grab the balls.
Okay. Always good advice, grab the balls. Candace Hart has just joined us. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning. So, thanks for having me.
So Candace, we've been talking about the running of the balls, but what we haven't talked about is the history and evolution of the actual mechanics of the ball run. How far back do you go with this?
I think I first took over running the balls in early 2000s from Christina Miller, and it's been passed down. Usually a Rotarian will pass it on after a few years. But it evolved quite a bit over the years. You know, we first started actually, and it kind of gives you a sense of how small in a way the scale was. We did tennis balls. So we used to let tennis balls down Main Street, and then one year it rained, and all the tennis balls stuck to the asphalt. So everybody had to get out and push them and try to kick these balls down. And then those that were around, this is actually a kind of a cool moment, is we went to like blue tarps, and everybody would hold one end of the blue tarp, and we'd let the golf balls down these blue tarps, and then you would shake it. And so everybody, it was a participation, you know, kind of thing. Fast forward to today, when we're letting 15,000 golf balls down, it's a radically different thing. And then there was a period we used, there were so few, when we went to golf balls, there just wasn't a lot of them at first, maybe like, you know, a few thousand. We used upside down rain gutters was the track. We thought we were pretty high tech at that point, actually. I mean, really, it felt like a huge evolution. And now, as you guys all know, we have track with panels, and we have sponsors, and we have this new gorgeous tower that was made locally by Reese Company, all out of steel. And so, yeah, it's changed quite a bit over the years, Roger.
And why did you have to have a new tower, Candace?
Yeah, I can say I was doing a college visit with my daughter when I got the phone call that that other tower, which was stored in some property, the person who leased the property, some sort of sublease, anyway, someone destroyed the tower. They just dismantled the old wood tower. And that was after a few, you know, choice words were shared about, just getting over the shock of that. You know, you start thinking, well, all right, if this is the case, how do we make it better? Like, how do we make it cooler? Now it's gotten bigger and better and cooler, and here we are.
So you have now, it's all metal, and it's got a lot of features the old tower didn't have.
Yeah, namely safety.
Right.
I had our mayor, Nan, climbing up like a rickety ladder to get onto a wood platform. And when you get to the top of the ladder, you'd have to hike your leg over like a wood bar. And that was our the height of safety for us back in the day. So now, actually, with a steel platform and a deck, there's actually a set of stairs. You can just walk up with handrails. We're not ADA compliant, but you can.
But close.
But pretty close.
Sir. It's quite close, luxurious.
Sir. And how do the balls get up there?
Well, we literally just hand carry them up in buckets. And it used to be this really kind of annoying process. We'd have to put them in buckets and hoist them up on a rope and do the, my arms, because I would be the one hoisting them up, and my arms were just gone by the end. But now, because of these stairs that I was talking about, it's actually rather easy just to have a few people standing on them. We just pass them to each other. So now it's, I think if you looked at this from an efficiency perspective and percentage, we've I don't know, hundreds of percentage points faster and more efficient. But honestly, now we can get the balls up there in a few minutes. And then the hopper that we put the balls in, we designed it so they could hold 20,000 golf balls. So
we're leaving room for growth.
Yeah, we certainly understand growth is a potential here. But so it's pretty big. So it has enough space in there now. And we do the Silver Strike balls. When we release those, we do them first. And that's still kind of hand poured into a separate channel that takes them down the track. So Silver Strike gets a special attention, and then the rest of the balls are in that hopper.
Okay. This all starts, what time are they running the ball? Will you release those balls on Monday?
You know, it's funny, my family was asking me that, and because I have to be there at 6:15 in the morning, I was like, I really don't know. Like, I'm just there, but I think it's 10:30, right? So 10:30, we're doing the balls and parade at 11 o'clock usually.
So you get that track knocked down and all done in that much time. Amazing.
Well, you know, a lot of hands make light work. This is a full town effort, so we appreciate all that help.
Candace Hart, Barry Nancone, Rothschild, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.